Hello everybody, good morning. And thank you for being here. In some of these meetings, one of the problems is when there are more speakers than people in the audience, so I appreciate that it's nearly a full house. And this is going to be a presentation a little bit different from the others. Even when I've been involved in all the process of the development of the PAHO framework and that, I want to use my time and my too many slides just to bring the discussion and talk with you about a few things that they really interest me at the moment, and I suppose that many of you as well. Okay? The first thing is the title. I think that, you know, competencies are a great tool, or it can be a great tool, but they are only a tool. Okay? And we are facing big changes in public health in the next decade. And I want to think about that and think with you, all right? Because there is a disclosure, and of course you are going to be submitted to, you know, the PowerPoint presentation toxicity that, you know, my broken English forced me to do, because if not, you won't follow me. But we will talk about that man later on, because I think it's important for public health. Okay. Before I continue, I want to ask you, how many of you have been working in competencies? Because you see, we are talking here, and you know, we suppose that everybody knows all, you know, the models and is familiar with the USA and the Canadian model and the UK model. But when I move around, you know, the region, you know, physicians, nurses, people on, you know, on the floor, you don't have a clue about what we are talking about, okay? And because of that, I want to give my presentation in three contexts. I will try to focus in 5 minutes in each. I try, and you will stop me one more time, okay? So I want to make some comments about the context and the models. Then I want to go back to the uses and abuses of competencies and for the many of you who are not familiar with these issues, okay? And finally, I'm going to do some digressions that I think they're important from my point of view for the future of public health, and that's why I call the presentation a revolving door for the future of public health. Okay, about the contents and the models, okay? First of all, we should agree what public health is, and now public health is everything. It's everything, eh? There are the engineers, we talk about public health in all policies and everything, so we have now, you know, what are the consequences for health in building a bridge, I have been there, and I got engineers trying to justify from the public health point of view the benefits of building a bridge in a certain place, and that we have the people who deal with food and everything. And one of the major challenges that we have at the moment is how to define public health. Also, when in some cases public health is not related anymore with one thing that I think is very important. I'm a European, I'm coming from all the mess from, you know, the social democracies and the welfare state and all that kind of things, right? So I'm prejudiced. I'm completely biased in relation to those issues. So when I think about public health, and we were trying to define that to establish a European master in public health, we did something like that. What are the core tasks? We don't talk about competencies. What we want our students and our people to know about it. And we have all those things, okay, the usual ones, okay? But suddenly, there were people, here comes everybody, you know, public health in all policies. So we have, biostatistics is not enough anymore, and then you have to be a good communicator and be a savvy in informatics and information technologies, and then you have skills in policy and law and know about ethics and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So things became very messy, and that's what I want. My first point will be like that, you know? Now we have some frameworks. They will evolve, and we have more and more competencies, but we have just people, and the people cannot swallow all the competencies that we are expecting from there. They are just humans, All right? So we have to clarify and define better the areas and think about public health in different ways than that, because you see, we are not as popular as we think. Okay? The second thing is that we are surrounded now with what I call the age of the web 2.0, and I think, you know, that we people from public health, we are very far away from many things that they are happening. People see us as the gray part of the professions in health, okay? Number squeezers and things like that. So I think that we have a great opportunity to use these new forms of scientific and educational collaboration and find innovative ways to do research community-based. We know a lot about that, more than anybody else. But I think that we are not using it. That's a personal view and perception, and we can discuss about it. Go back to the competencies. And it seems that competencies didn't exist before public health people found it. They have been used for the last 40 years. You know, there was a man called Bloom that defined in a taxonomy, and this was used by industry, business, and, you know, everybody else but us for nearly 30 years. Okay? So there's nothing new. And all the technology and the methodology and all that is very well known for people in human resources development and that. And it's all this mess about the verbs and that everybody has to know if they are going to work in competencies. You know all this, don't you? And if not, this is a crash course in competencies, okay? If you don't know Bloom, you don't know anything about competencies, all right? Let's put us together and, you know, you memorize all the verbs and then you are ready to develop the competencies, okay? And this is very important. I think this, apart from jokes and that, I think this is a very important point. We have done the job, and we have done it very, very well, very well. In many different countries, many people have put their lives, like this woman here, it's true, to develop, you know, perfect frameworks. I think that we are not going to be able to improve what the Americans, you know, and the Canadians, you heard about them, okay? These are the documents, they are there, all right? You just Google it. It's very simple. You put competencies, public health, and immediately you will have all the documents. Some of them, they are around 100 pages long, all right? But that's not a big problem about it, okay? And also, you see the UK model that it was only mentioned but nobody has shown, and it was an inspiration for our cube and development. We have done the job. We have done, they have done the job, they have done it very well, and now people like us in PAHO, we are trying to put things together and put it in a different kind of environment, okay? Why? Because Bolivia, or certain parts of this continent, they don't have the infrastructure for public health that the British, the Canadians, or the American has, or the Spaniards, in my case. We have a great infrastructure for public health. We have the people, we have the means, we have everything, but there are many people in the world that they don't have that. The idea of PAHO is saying, okay, maybe many of the things that we are doing in public health, they can be done by other health professionals. And this is our bet. And we think that is possible, because in some countries, if you have a doctor, if you have a nurse, it's a complete luxury. If you dedicate them to public health, they need to do real clinical practice and clinical work, because they are, you know, too important for that. Okay? So don't you worry, the work is done. All right? I don't think that we can bet it. I'm sure. I mean, you can go through, but every time that I read these documents and I know some of them by heart, always I believe that, you know, it cannot be better, okay? You have to mix it and remix it and reduce it or whatever, but it's done, okay? But, you know, if competencies are the answer, what was the question, right? And here I want just to go very quickly, and I'll be a little bit repetitive, but I think that is important for the people who are not familiar with these issues, to just to get some feeling about, you know, the uses and abuses of competencies frameworks, okay? Because they are tools, and a tool can be used in many different ways. Imagine that I give you, you know, a letter opener with the sign of the Alhambra in Granada that is very beautiful, okay? And I give it to you just to open letters, right? But then you're right here, that it is a loose screw and reduces to a screw. Or you need to break, you know, into a drawer and you just break it. Or you go outside there to Pennsylvania Avenue and you start sticking it in people. Why not? Okay? Tools can be used in many different ways, and this is a very important thing to remember. Okay? Many health institutions are spending this very minute vast amounts of money and time introducing competencies. It's the flavor of the days. It has been done in many areas before, but now it's in health, and particularly in public health. And we are overloaded with competencies and expectancies from people. The question is if they are reaching the people that they are intended for, and what brings added value to their use. And I've been working in health services for a long time and dealing with people from the human resources side. And we employers believe that competencies can give clear messages to employees about the behaviors required by their activities, what we are expecting from them. Okay? But when you talk with the people, users have a very conflicting views about competencies. And this is not new, it has been known always. Okay? Some are somewhat suspicious about the real purpose for introducing them, right? And the general uses, and it has been repeated all around, they can be many. But I think, you see, competencies in all the fields, they can be used for mainly for these four purposes. Assessing and measuring performance, developing academic programs and in-service training, linking to salary and incentives, or planning human resources for health, in our case, okay? But if you go to the literature and you try to really see for what they are used and for what they are used in public health, mainly, as Joan was mentioning, is only used by academic institutions. 90% of your academic institutions are using your framework. There's a reason. They need accreditation, and this is a way to develop nicely the syllabus for your master in public health. Okay? But then, there is not a real linkage with the needs in the services. And there is always a big tension going around. Okay? Competencies are used for that in every field. Okay? But it seems to me that in public health, 90% of the cases, they are only used for that. And I have a problem with that. It's not, they are not going out the academic field, at least in many countries that I know. You see, we talk maybe about Canada or the States, and that it can be different. But, you know, when you go to other places, first of all, they don't know anything about them. They don't use it. The people who use it are the schools of public health to develop their syllabus for the masters of public health. And they are not really introduced in things like, you know, how to rate job performance or how to define job requirements or determine the salary and pay increases of people. So it's all well in the theory, but in the reality, it seems to me that, you see, frameworks should leave the academic world. And we don't know how to do it, and we have to work a lot on that. Okay? A couple of comments about this. Introducing competencies in any field without a clear purpose raises staff suspicion. And they do, and they go like that. Because the first thing that they feel is that you are going to use that to measure how they are acting. And people, believe me, we don't like to be measured. Okay? And evaluate it. We say that it's great, but at the moment that somebody does it with you don't like it. Right? It's very well known. My experiences with different kinds of competencies is that there is a big reaction in the workforce anytime that you talk about it. It's very candy here and everything, but when you put it in the reality, people don't really like them. Okay? Also, they go into interpersonal skills. And those are very difficult to measure. It's very easy to say that you have to have skills in communication, but then how you measure that, okay? Or how you measure some of the values that, you know, Sylvia was mentioning and that. So it's just a few points. It's not trying to be, you know, the devil advocate about competencies. I said, you know, at the beginning that this is a very important tool, and I really believe that it can help a lot of things. And I will finish this bit talking about that. Competencies set clear behavioral expectations, and that's good for everybody, employers and employees. I expect that from you, and this is what I want from you, okay? Apart from having the skills in your Master of Public Health, okay? So if you work in public health in this service, I'm expecting from you to do this, and this, okay? But believe me, one of the things that is terrible when you do that is that people believe that if they do well, they will want a reward. And it's not part of their job. So I'm doing my competencies very well. It's not only my job. I want an increase of pay salary and I want a reward. And this is establishing a continuous confusion. They help to identify training. That's, of course, that's for me the reality. That's an incredible tool for education of the health workforce and to integrate human resources for health programs. Okay? So, as I said in the first part, I think that we have done the job and we won't have to face that famous sentence from Chesterton. We have the tools, we are trying it, and we see what are the results. But before we finish, I want to go into three or four small digressions, okay? And no panic, there's nothing strange about that, all right? But just tell me something. How many of you are wearing a wrist watch? Okay, all right, okay, baby boomers, all right? Public health, how many of you are not wearing a wristwatch? Okay, it's more or less half a half. Why are you not wearing a wristwatch? It's a cell phone, okay? So, why are you wearing a wristwatch? No, I'm just talking about that because that, for me, that's a great example try to persuade you that we have to be a cushion generation. Okay, many of the people that we are here, we have to let the way for the people that they are at our backs, that they don't wear wrist watches. Okay, because they belong or they will belong to the generation 2020, and many of us, they are still baby boomers. Okay. These people are different. They have different minds and they behave in a different way. And I think that we are not doing enough for them. And not enough from the size of public health. And I showed you something that I've been working on because we were having a meeting in, hello my friend, in medical education a couple of months ago. And suddenly I realized, I saw this advertisement just moving around, you know. And suddenly I realized that we have moved from Marcus Welby, that many of you will remember, that he was the model doctor of some generations before, to this other guy, who fascinates all the medical students in the world. Don't believe that medical students, I'm talking, we could talk about nursing and other specialties, but I'm a medical doctor and I deal with this, do not believe. Not for even a moment that the medical students are attracted to your public health. Okay? And this is my big problem, and this is what I want to make that point. How you and me, we are going to be able to attract to public health more students, brilliant people, because in many countries, like in my country, people going into public health, they go only there because they cannot do other things, you know? Because they wanted to be cardiovascular surgeons, but they couldn't. So they finish being frustrated public health professionals. And I don't want to see that anymore, because you see, we have the competencies, but we need the people to apply them. And we have less and less and less people coming into our area. And I think that we are not sexy. So we have to do something about it. And that's what I think is a digression, but I think it's an important point. Even, you know, many of you that they are in the academia, more and more you are having problems to recruit enough students to fill your Masters of Public Health, because it's a dead end, okay? So I think that we have to do something about it, apart from developing frameworks. That is very nice, okay? And also, many of you are Americans, so you will remember all of them. We also remember them from every country, you know, from MASH to emergencies to anyone that you mention. But also there's another problem. At least, I don't know about nurses of other professions, but doctors will move where the money is. And if we don't put money in public health, doctors are not coming to work with us, I promise you. In public health there is no money, and this is the first thing that you have to tell your students or your residents. You're not going to get rich doing this, you know. You are in the wrong place at the wrong time, and you know. So see what is happening there. That's the percentage of the reliance of foreign medical doctors with the actual data in some countries. In your country, it's 25%. But in countries like New Zealand or the UK at the moment, 50% of the doctors are foreign doctors. Okay? And they don't go and work in public health, I promise you. Okay? The second question is this, and then answer for yourself. I said that I'm biased and prejudiced, and a victim of the social democracies in Europe, including the welfare state in which I really believe. And I believe that health is not a consumer's good. And health care is not a consumer's good. And there is something called governance. Health governance, which is the duty of the states. But I believe that. And most of the people in the world don't believe that. Okay? But there is hope. And I'm going to use an example from the United States that I think is modally. Okay? 2-3 years ago, Obama decided to put a lot of money in research for change. We don't know what is happening with that money, and there are many people who are very concerned about it. Even the JAMA is making calls for researchers to send the results of all the money that they receive, because we don't know what is happening with it. But what I want to show you that the Institute of Medicine did something very interesting. So it's hope for public health. If you see the 100 priorities in research for the following decade, you will see, you see the first one, from the 100 recommendations, 50 are related with the healthcare delivery systems. Okay? So what is important is no more medicine. It's how we deliver care, how we manage the systems. Look at the second one, racial and ethnic disparities. That's our field. It's part of our field. It's determinants and that. So even in a country like this, the Institute of Medicine, doing the priorities for research for the future, focus on those two things, that they are very close to our hearts. And also, when people define what is the future of the health services in the world, they talk about these 6 lines for a new code. Everybody talks about safe and reliable care, service redesign and transformation, leadership, clinical improvement, patient partnership, and learning, education, and culture. Okay? But we have a problem. And even here, with the comparative effectiveness model, we still don't know how to do that. That's my model. Okay? And this is personalized care, or whatever it is. Okay? But then, we have to accommodate that to here comes everybody. And we don't know how to do it, especially when these people come into the place. All right? And this is what I think is one of the big, big challenges for the future in public health. We have been focused, and I think that we should continue to be focused on that, but we are not having options for what I call the wellness society. In many parts of the world, public health has abandoned many, many people that they are interested in something that is health and beyond. And they are just having serious, very serious problems because the people in public health, we are not with them. When you see, for example, what is happening in this country with the vaccine of the HPV vaccine, is something very worrying. Especially because in this country you pay for it. In other countries like my country, the government pay for it. But we still don't have any evidence whatsoever that it will work or it is working. But industry, even some governors of Texan origin and that, have interest in that. And they have been promoting those things. So that's my last point. From the point of view of public health, we are forgetting the wellness people, and we should work with them as well, and go from desire to reality, or reality to desire. The last question. I don't want to put that fellow, but I couldn't download the one I wanted. That's my favorite page on the internet. If any of you, I suppose that many of you will know it, okay? But if not, you see, it's the only thing that is worth to remember from my talk. TED, TED. Go to Google, and you have, you know, entertainment for the rest of the year, all right? That's my favorite talk. It's Ken Robinson and talk about Bring On the Learning Revolution. But the guy that I wanted to put there is the guy that I think he has done more for public health than anybody else or any big institution. His name, and many of you will know it, is Hans Rosling. You know him? Gapminder, the man of the bubbles. I think that we should do more bubbles. He has done for public health more than anybody else in the last decade. And one of the reasons is how to use with imagination and creativity all the data and all the ideas that we have. And I think there is a great path for doing that. Thanks a million, and sorry for, you know, keeping you there.